This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 341 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So this episode, we'd like to thank our co-producer, Laura D. Thank you so much, Laura, for your support. And we'll mention at the very end, we'll mention about what a co-producer is and how you can look into becoming one if you are interested.
So, Sam, how are you? It's been a tiny bit since we chatted last.
I have been...
You, this has been a
experiencing...
week.
Experiencing... Oh, yeah, it's been a week. But I was just going to say I've had mask drama.
Mask drama? Oh, Our mutual friend was saying that she can't get one to fit you.
Yeah, she's made...
Six, she said.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, because... And I even... So, she had the generic ones. I just bought, like, three of them for us up here. And when I got them, like, it was just... They were too big. Her, like, regular size ones, they were too big for me. And they were too small for my boyfriend. So, I was like, okay, well, I paid her for them. And I was like, well... Do two more for me. Would you all send you our measurements? So we did. We took a tape measure and measured in the two spots so she knew the dimensions of our faces. And my boyfriend's came back up and fit him perfectly. And the one she mailed me just was fitting too loose on my face still. So I was just like, don't worry about it. It'll be fine. We'll make it work. And she's like, no, I'm doing one more. and so that one came. And to be honest, it's just because my issue was it was gaping on my face. Ew. And I think it's because I have a heart-shaped face. So it's wide.
And then it tapers.
At my cheekbones,
it tapers.
And it's not narrow straight, yeah. At my chin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very narrow at my chin. So when you try to fit that, the width of the mask is the same all the way across. So the bottom part of the mask was like gaping and hanging off of my ears so that the ears were never tight enough because it would go the distance from my chin to my ear is a lot smaller or not my chin. Yeah, I guess my chin. So the bottom of my face to my ears was a lot less needed a lot less fabric. And the top part across the bridge of my nose needed more fabric. So they were just kind of hanging from my ears, mostly. It was a weird thing. Anyway, and then I had some that I'd ordered on back order.
Oh, gosh.
From Amazon. That, like, I ordered them, like, a month and a half ago. And they just arrived today. So it was the day that all the masks got delivered. That was my day.
So you still haven't gotten one that fits?
The two that I ordered from Amazon showed up today, and they have cinchers on the ear.
Oh, okay.
The ear elastics. Uh-huh. So I can adjust it. The problem with the ones that our friend made us is they don't have they're not adjustable.
They just go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So I couldn't tighten it to make it be a more custom fit, but the ones I got from Amazon do that. We have plenty of masks now. I heard you had an issue today with some cans of soda.
Oh, my God. It was like a cluster from a muster. I don't even know. So, okay. I have tried several times. Not just two stores, but two stores several times. And I don't want to... I'm trying. I don't know. I think, well, Summer does her own thing, and I do my own thing. But I'm trying to, as much as possible, because there are some times where you cannot do... a drive-by or a pickup. So as much as possible, especially for groceries, I am doing pickup from different stores. So I've tried two different stores, and one of them, both of them actually, I went through, I ordered a number of things, and including some diet ginger ale that I'm trying to get my hands on. So I tried it with one store, I don't even know, I'm not kidding, like three times since quarantine stuff happened. Like, so in the last 2 months, at least two or three times. It goes through, I add them to the cart, I pay for everything. And then, of course, when it comes time to actually fulfill your order, then they will, you know, that you have to a certain time to
change your order, change your cart, and then they can, or they will go through, and you can mark things that you are okay with substitutions. Like if you say you wanted bread, a certain kind of bread, but they're out of it, they can give you a different kind of bread, but you still get bread, okay? Like if you ask for Diet Coke and they don't have any, they might get you Diet Pepsi, you know, unless you say do not substitute. So I don't, you can't really substitute Diet Ginger Ale because Diet 7-Up is not the same. But anyway, I have had a bugger of a time getting this stuff. And so we're fortunate. I mean, it's just luck. But anyway, two stores I've done that. I've gone through ordering and I ended up picking up my order, but I found out the morning of the order when they said, okay, everything is, or the afternoon of, whatever, like every single time, sorry, even though I added it to my thing when they went to collect it and make my order, sorry, we're out of Diet Ginger Ale. Sorry, this doesn't exist here anymore. We don't have it. I'm not kidding. So for the last 2 months, I have been on a mission to try and find some. So our parents, both separately, are former and retired military. So they are able to go to a local commissary. And so they go probably once a week or once every 2 weeks. And they go in, you know, they wear the masks. They're very safe. They go, I think, during a certain time of day. Well, they go when they can, but I think they try to go when it's for, you know, people who are slightly older. So I asked our dad, could you see if they had any Diet Ginger Ale? He's like, sure, Dolly, I'll go look. And I said, I am not kidding. Whatever they have, I mean, maybe not buy out the entire store, but this has been, I have not been able to get this. It's not happening. So if you go there, could you bring me like, if you see like a 12 pack of it, can you get me like four? I'm not kidding you. Like this is what, I don't really drink a lot of caffeine. So if I want anything after like 10 a.m., that's not water, because I drink a lot of water, it has to be number one diet, but it has to be caffeine free. And there's, I don't want orange or anything like that. So he finds some. And today I went over, I picked them up. He got me two 2-liters. And two 12 packs. So as he was, I put the 2 liters away in the trunk. And as he was bringing over the two 12 packs, he dropped one of the boxes. And, it, you know, the cans are in the box, so nothing fell out. But because it landed like on one end, a can like exploded. But it was in the box, so it didn't like spray everywhere, but it started to drip. So we're like, oh, Lord. So we opened it, got the one can out because it was just one can. And I had some plastic. For this case, you want plastic shopping bags in my trunk where I kind of double bagged it to make sure that any residual dropping wouldn't be, you know, getting over the rest of my trunk. So I had another errand to do. So I go out, I do my errand, and I come home. I am very lucky that at my apartment complex, my assigned parking spot is literally 10 feet, 8 feet, whatever it is, just across a one-way driving area from my front door. So I don't pride myself. It's nothing to be proud of necessarily, but I am definitely not lazy. It depends on how you look at it. I'm lazy, so I don't want to make two trips, so I make sure I get it all in one. Or I'm not lazy because I try to be stinking superwoman and carry everything. So it's either lazy or opposite of lazy. Look at it. Call it whatever you want to call it. So I come into the apartment complex and I turn around. It's like one big, you know, square. It's two-way traffic, but it's like a one kind of a lane. It's a pretty small complex. I pull in and I see as soon as I turn the corner that there is a fire truck and an ambulance. And I'm like, oh gosh, what happened, right? I don't know a lot of people here, so I don't even know what to ask. So I'm like, okay, fine. I don't want to go by them. And then I think I couldn't tell exactly, but they were far enough, close enough to my front door that I was pretty sure they were blocking, like I couldn't get to my parking spot easily. So I parked further away and like, okay, just like I said, I'm going to bag everything and take it into my apartment. So I get in my car, I go to the trunk, I start to pull things out. I had double bagged that open 12 pack and I don't know what happened. I don't know how I like missed it, but I must have carried it at the wrong angle. I don't know, but I picked it up to put it down on, honestly. One can fell out after another can fell out after another. Like I think I burst like 7 cans and it wasn't all at once. It was one, boom, two, boom. I was like, oh my God. Like there's not a party out here or anything, but I was like, oh Lord. And my shoes were soaking wet, covered in ginger ale. My dress was sopping wet because everything was right on my feet and then up at me.
it would have been bad enough. It was like, you know, one or two, but it never ended. I was like, every single can fell. Not every single can exploded, but about six or seven exploded. And so I'm walking around. Thankfully, there's like no slope or anything. So it was all pretty flat. And I'm just like, I'm like, okay, I give up. I'm not going to like, I mean, I'm not happy about it, but I'm not going to like rush. I'm not going to, you know, curse. I'll curse inside my head. So yeah, I, you know, my dad dropped it and then I flibberty gibbeted it. I mean, it wasn't wonderful. And then I got in, I put myself down and I'm like, Summer, I need a little bit before we record. And then I realize we come to record and I realize my phone isn't ready. I mean, it's been a day. Can we put it that way? It hasn't been a bad day. It's just been like, let's explode. Let's explode all over each other right in front of the place where people are trying to like maybe save someone's life. And like, let's not make a scene, please. Oh, it was not good. But no one, well, I can't say no one's hurt because I don't know what that person was feeling or whatever, but someone was taken away. But, I hope that they're okay, obviously. So, yeah. Is that the story you meant? Kind of?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have told that a lot shorter.
But then we wouldn't have had so much fun. Anywhoozle. So.
Was it?
I mean, not really. I don't ever need to relive that again, but yeah. Okie doke. So are we ready to go on to the show?
I'm ready if you are.
Okie doke.
And now on to our read-along. This week we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with Chapter 4, entitled Serpent in Eden.
So Bree is entering her cabin, careful of any creepy crawlies that might be lingering on the floor, because at one point in the past she had almost stepped on a small rattlesnake. If that ever happened to me, I think that would be enough to literally make me almost pass out, or if I didn't pass out, I might vomit. I don't know. I would not handle that well.
A snake?
Almost stepping on a snake. Yeah, if it were kind of dark and I didn't see it and I saw it scuttle away, I don't know. Just the thought of it. I can't even watch shows with snakes on them. It's too much. It's too much.
I don't like the idea of there being any wildlife inside of my house.
Well, yeah. That goes without saying, but a snake is not... A snake, yes, but also a poisonous snake. Ugh. She sees no sign of a snake or vole, but, quote, but something larger had been and gone, pushing its way through the oiled skin tacked over the window, unquote. So that's fun. How it's the 18th century Ridge equivalent of coming home and finding your window broken.
Or a little blonde girl sleeping in your
glass
bed.
Glass broken. Oh, well, this little blonde girl was not asleep. But
just eating all her food,
something along those lines. Oh yeah. So she is looking around and she sees a basket that contained the roasted peanuts had been knocked down and it was half eaten. And there's all kinds of, you know, shells and remainders on the floor. And so because it's not necessarily that we hear a lot about peanuts, but since Summer made such a big deal about the peanuts and the peanut butter and jelly sandwich and episode, 511? It was... Now whenever I see peanuts, they kind of stand out to me. Thanks, Sam. So I'm thinking, oh, peanuts. So that's what happened to all the rest of the peanuts. They gave them to Bree.
It sounds like she likes to keep a store of peanuts. Like, that's where she keeps roasted peanuts.
It was in a basket. It wasn't even, like, closed. Yeah.
Ginger, it's not like they had Ziploc baggies back then.
I know that. But they could put, like, lids
and
on
roasted
things.
Peanuts in the shell. Roasted peanuts in the shell don't really need a cover. They're not going stale.
That's what I tried to tell
you. And they're already in their own little handy carrying
case. That's what I tried
case.
To tell you about episode 511, and you wouldn't have it. Once they were roasted, they keep a little bit or they can stick around a little bit. You were not having that.
That was never my problem. What was your problem with the peanuts? It was the fact that it took them that long from the beginning of the episode to the end. A month. It was a month, right? From when they planned to leave till they actually left. And the whole episode started with them coming home with peanuts. And it took them a month to roast and make the peanut butter to make those sandwiches.
You know better than to... And I still do
and
it.
Seems like it took
I still
way
do it too,
long.
But you know better than to question the show and anything related to time or timing. It's you're not well, ever going to be happy.
And if you go back and watch it, they are doing something with those stupid peanuts in every scene. Every scene. So it's like it's not like that was just like batch number 2. It was the same batch.
So which batch was it that the raccoon got into?
I don't know.
So something was still in the cabin making noise. She startles it and sees that it is a pretty good sized chunk of monk raccoon. She goes after it with the broom and it drops the trout, the smoked trout it has just happened to be chomping on. And this made me laugh. Pardon, but made me laugh. Quote, and made off like a fat banker and fled from creditors. I don't know why it's so funny.
You know what that reminds me of? There was a meme floating around the internet about like it was either a possum or some kind of marsupial. I don't think it was a raccoon, but I feel like it was a possum that like broke into a bakery and they found it the next morning. So full
oh,
of food.
And it,
like
passed
it
out.
Ate so many of like whatever it was, donuts, that it couldn't go anywhere. Like it was stuck there, like fat and sassy, and they found him the next morning, like drunk on donuts or whatever the food item was. But I'm like, that reminded me of this.
I saw a meme of it was a corgi puppy had gotten into some jelly or donuts or something, and he was covered mm-hmm. and he like laying on the floor. And the meme is just like almost an aerial shot of this corgi puppy, and his snout and a lot of his face is covered in like violet, purple, reddish, pinkish, and it's just all over the floor. All you see is it looks like a murder scene, except it's not red, it's all like purple pink. And he's passed out because he's like a sugar coma. Oh my gosh, that made me laugh so hard. So the raccoon had not only disturbed the peanuts,
it was a possum.
Oh, that's funny. That's still funny. The raccoon had not... Oh, so yes, send that to me and I'll try to include it in the show notes. The raccoon had not only disturbed the peanuts, it had licked the butter out of its mold. It began to chomp on some of the fish that had been hanging in the rafters, but it had not gotten to all 3 jars of honeycomb, only 1. But the vegetables that were in storage were dumped on the floor. The fresh cheese was eaten. And the maple syrup had been knocked over. And that was like the straw that broke.
That was
straw
the straw
that broke yeah. the camel's back. It was just, she's like, nope. So she goes off on the raccoon. And Roger, who was just coming in after her, asks her what's up. And he startles her. And she has been picking up or, you know, looking at some of the vegetables that had fallen down, and she had picked at least 1 or 2 up, and he startled her and she threw a potato at him and it hit him in the forehead.
She's deadly, man.
Oh, well, they're solid too. They can like give you, I'm sure they can give you a concussion. They're dense. Now, Roger's okay. There's no blood. I know that's not the only marker or measure of someone being okay, but there isn't blood, so that's good. And we find out that Jem, whoa, Jem. When I take notes, I don't think about it. It's only when I see it. And when I'm reading my notes, I think of Jem. Apparently. So Jem is at the McGillivrys. He had gone with Lizzie and her pa to celebrate Sangha's engagement. Now, let's back up a tick. Who the heck is Sangha and what is going on here? So remember,
one of the McGillivrys.
Not in the show, but in the book, Lizzie is betrothed to Manfred McGillivray. I think he's the only son, or he's at least one of the sons, if not the only son, of Uta and Robert. It's an R name. McGillivrays. She's very German. That's not a very good German accent, but whatever. She's very Deutsch. And so she's very specific and very much a mama. I don't know what you call it, but just not really a helicopter mom, although maybe you call her that. She's just, she's very definitively in charge, or wants to be in charge of her kids' lives, at least until they get married. So since, who knows if they would have gone or not, but since Lizzie was betrothed to Sangha's brother, Manfred, Lizzie and her father, they took Jem with them to go to, it's about a 5-mile walk, we find out, to go to the McGillivrays to celebrate Sangha's engagement.
5-mile ride.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my gosh. That's true.
They may have 5 miles somewhere. Regardless.
That's true. Well, it is a different 5 miles because if I don't have to walk it, it's different. But it is the distance. Yes. So this was now her focus. Looking, she'd gone from, of course, you know, hoping there wasn't a snake or something in her cabin to surprising and scaring away a raccoon and chasing him out to Roger coming, almost killing her husband, to now focus on this engagement. And the reason is because Uta, who had chosen most of her children's, or at least narrowed the field down to make the choices very narrow so that whomever her children did choose for their engagement marriages, it would be on her short list. So she'd be happy either way. So Uta, whom we know from book 5, but not from season 5, although she was in it, she's never fleshed out, is a very involved mother. She'd chosen a few candidates for her daughter, Sangha, to select from according to her criteria. Land, money, respectability, and age, appearance, and charm were near the bottom of that list. So while her other daughters had married people she'd approved of, Sangha was a little bit different. So they were like on pins and needles, curious to see whom Sangha would choose. So there's Heinrich Strasse, a fine but poor young man, or Ronnie Sinclair, the cooper. Now, we don't need to go in a lot of detail about Ronnie Sinclair. As far he has his own shop. He is known on the ridge. I wouldn't say he's necessarily tight with Jamie, but he definitely he's of, you know, the more well-known men there on the ridge. If you don't remember, I think it was in book 4 when they were arriving on the ridge, setting everything up. It could have been in book 5 though. Ronnie Sinclair was the one who'd sketched naked pictures of women, like on the walls of his shop or something. Remember the ones that Bree saw? And he was like giving her the eye and all that. So that's how I remember Ronnie. He was kind of a creeper. But he's also 30 years older than Sangha. Okay, so those are her choices. So Summer, given that choice, whom would you choose?
Summer now or Summer at 1920?
Both.
Summer now, I'm going to go for the cooper who's got a job and you know.
Fair enough. Well, we don't know that Heinrich Strasse was really cute or anything.
Summer 19 is probably more of an idealist, not an idealist, a romantic-ish, who goes, you know, I'm going to follow my heart and not think about it. We'll figure it out. Whereas me now is like, does he have a job? A good job? Does he have his own cell phone?
Oh, that's something. Kate O writes, there are just so many little moments that make me either smile or laugh outright. There's Bree charging the pantry with a banshee yell, Bree firing a potato straight at Roger's forehead, the fact that Roger is just as upset about the maple syrup as she is and isn't even upset at her for the head injury, and the fact that she asks, are you bleeding? Where's Jem? In the same breath. And then in the blink of an eye, we're on to Ridge gossip about who Sangha McGillivray picked to marry. So the reason this is such a big deal, and this is like, you know, first of all, we're on the ridge. It's 18th century. Come on. There's like gossip is outside of actual cash and some barter, obviously. Gossip. Gossip is like, it's the only thing they have. The newspapers they get are like probably months or 6 months old. You know, books are hard to come by. Paper's expensive. So the stuff that travels, like, this is a big deal for them. Not just obviously for Sangha, but it's stuff that everyone wants to know. Maybe they're nosy, but it's also their neighbor, right? Their friends. They're people that they're people intermarry or intermingle, commingle, and families marry into each other. So it is a big deal in this community. But the thing is, when Lizzie and
her dad had left,
they left a note for Mrs. Bug because she wasn't ready to leave. But they left a note saying where they were going, but they never said whom she'd chosen. So that's why Roger and Bree are like, damn it! Who is this? Who is this?
So is Mrs. Bug, though.
Oh, yeah.
She also wants to know.
Like I said, everyone wants to know. So this was chat on the ridge for months. They are bursting to find out. As I said, it was a 5-mile walk to the McGillivrys. So then, yeah, you know, let's just go to the big house for supper. And, you know, we're there and McDonald's there. So we'll have a like little extra entertainment. It won't be boring. And so while Bree is making up her mind, Roger is molesting an apple, telegraphing the things they could do if they stayed in. Bree asks about his head, and he says, you could kiss it and make it better. So she does. And she says, is that better? He's like, nah, maybe try a bit lower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, Roger. But she's game, so they do it. Kate O. writes, I think in book 5, I started to sympathize with Brianna more. The things she was upset about, or maybe acting selfish or self-centered about, were more understandable as she matured into the role of wife and mother and dealt with a ridiculous amount of drama within her family. And it's in book 6 that I relate to her more. This wicked feeling at making love during the day because normally there is an ever-present child. The feeling of the child's presence, whether he's there and you're trying to be ever so quiet or he's not there, and the absence is its own presence, if that makes sense. I think it makes sense. After, Roger says that he doesn't remember the last time he'd seen her nakies. And Rizal, it's been 3 days, Roger. Come on. And he's like, no, I don't mean that. I mean, like, seeing you unclothed in daylight. But though they're having fun, she is very aware, and this is what Kate was alluding to. She's very aware of Jem's, whoa, 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 Jem, absence. A sudden wind blows the door shut. And I thought, they left the door open? What? They left the door open to enjoy the low light, the light that's coming in still.
They left the light in. I don't think that they had all the windows in that cabin that they have in the TV show.
The big house.
So they're in the cabin. They're in the little house.
Yeah, the first cabin.
Yeah, but the cabin in the book, I don't think it had windows. Or if it did, it didn't have like glass windows.
Oh, yeah, maybe not. It at least had one window with, no glass. It at least had one window with that oil cloth that was tacked down that the raccoon got through. So Roger gets up a wind blows the door shut. Roger gets up to open it and she follows him and she's, you know, looking at him, admiring him, blah, blah, blah. And she tells him that he has a farmer's tan, which I don't know. I thought was funny. And he's like, well, I kind of am a farmer. Am I not? I mean, kind of. Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. Kate O. writes, sex with the door open when you live in essentially a one room cabin. Have we not learned from the past? The neighbors barely heed a closed door before rushing in. And we definitely learned that or saw that in the show with Jamie basically knocking down the door, rushing in when everyone is naked. So near to twilight, they stand together. It just made me laugh. I was like, really? Wait, they're just standing there like diddling each other, basically. They're standing nakies and she plays with his short and curlies. That's exactly what Diana writes.
Word for word?
Yes, she says short and curlies.
I'm going to look it up.
You don't believe me? Go for it.
I thought you said her short and curlies. It's his short and curlies.
No, his.
Yeah, I thought you said hers. And I was like, no, she doesn't.
Oh, no, no. She plays with his.
Does he have any not short and curlies? And he's looking outside. Aren't all men's hairs on their bodies short and curlies, technically?
It's everyone's, men and women, unless you laser it or wax it. I'm, you know what I mean? Saying. It's everyone has short and curlies. Yeah.
I am just saying it could be his thigh hair. I'm just saying
all I doubt she's playing with his thigh hairs on her. Come on.
I mean, I'm just saying all of the hair is pretty similar on some men.
That is true, but it's very dense at certain areas.
Have you ever seen Richard Rankin?
I thought you were about to say, have I seen his short
without
and curly
shirt on?
No, of course I have. Has...
No. I mean, we all saw them. I'm just saying all of his hair. He has so much hair everywhere.
He's a hairy man. Yes. So she's playing with his short and curlies, and he's looking outside, quote, watching out for a snake bearing apples. Now, they're hungry, but Roger asks her if she'd mind going to get Jem that night. She agrees, and she sees his, quote unquote, snake. It's a small green caterpillar that was kind of remnant from him being outside, from him from coming in. He's a small green caterpillar in his hair. Kate O. writes, I am, but, he broke off, hesitating, and his fingers tightened in hers. You'll think I'm mad, but would you mind? Okay, she quotes it. Hold on a second. So, okay, Kate O. writes, Roger wanting to go get Jem that night is another relatable moment. My husband and I have definitely been guilty of this. Going on date night, and even though my daughter was safely snug at my parents', convincing ourselves on our way back home that it's actually early enough to pick her back up on our way home instead of having the night away from her. She's 11 now. We don't do that anymore. I get you. I get you. So, though they're both hungry, they leave for the McGillivrees to go see their boy. And throughout the chapter, beginning with Bree finding the intruder until through till the end, there's a sense of unease for Bree. Quote, suddenly her uneasiness was stronger. The light was fading, night coming on. The mockingbird had fallen silent, and the forest seemed full of mystery and threat. Unquote. So, foreshadow much? If I remember correctly, I don't think anything big and bad happens in the next chapter. But, I mean, I could be completely wrong.
But it's longer.
Oh, well, yeah. It's totally longer. But, yeah, it was just interesting that this is, so you have the fruit that has, well, and veg, but the fruit and veg that has in storage that has been, you know, gotten into by the raccoon that she is kind of fingering or, you know, picking up. You have that starting it. You have a little literal representation of a snake, right? Like the closest to it would be. And then you have them naked, Adam and Eve. And then you have them wanting to, like, the shame. Not shame, but, yeah, well, okay, not shame. Her, like, feeling like it kind of being wicked. For them being around each other, unclothed when it's daylight or when it's a lot of light compared to normal when they're together. And so you have the apple, you have not an actual snake, but a snake from before, right? So she was hoping that she wouldn't run into a snake because she had before. And then you have...
Caterpillar.
Well, and then you have the caterpillar, which is, you know, it has a snake... has a serpentine form to it, I would say. And then, so there's all kinds of the apple, the nakedness, the snake or lack of a snake, but then the nature and how once they...
Oh, there was a snake.
Oh, Summer.
There was a snake.
Okay, so there's all kinds of things that can reflect the idea or the allegory of the Garden of Eden.
Like the chapter title?
Summer, yes. My point is, it's not just give me a title. It's all throughout the chapter. That's what I'm saying. So it was an interesting chapter. And I thought I had some very sweet, obviously very sweet moments, some funny moments. And I am curious what we're going to find out
in the slightly longer chapter in chapter 5. But to end us, that sounds really bad. To close us out, Kate O. writes, Diana has such a gift for giving us snippets of everyday life that fill you in on what's been going on while we were away. This is one of those, quote, a day in the life on the ridge, as you ladies would put it, chapters.
It's like a slice of life, right? It's it's just a day in the life where nothing is happening. It's like the Lallybroch chapters.
Yeah.
In her earlier books. It's always just that moment of calm before the ish really hits the ish. Fan.
Yes, the ish. That is true. Oh, the ish. Oh, no, the ish.
And that was chapter 4. Join us next week when we will continue our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapter 5, entitled The Shadows Which Fire Throws. And as always, if you'd like to find out how to join us and contribute to our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/snow to find out more. And if you'd like to continue the conversation, if this listening once a week just isn't enough of an Outlander fix for you, join us on our Facebook page.
Come on, join us.
On our Facebook page, and you can, our Facebook group, and you can easily navigate there by going to www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, a very special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Laura D. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, including the opportunity to become a co-producer, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon. And thank you guys, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.